And we're live on the Entrepreneur's Handbook podcast. Today we have with us Aaron Dinin, who is a professor at Duke University for entrepreneurship. He is especially passionate about social media and the opportunity that it brings for entrepreneurs. And that's what he decided to talk to us today about, and how you can use social media to grow your business and your brand. So Aaron, why is this topic so important to you? Thank you for coming on.
Hey, thank you for having me. I love the podcast here and what you're doing and all the great guests you have. So I'm flattered to be one of them. My background is I have a PhD in English literature, but that doesn't seem to matter too much. Instead, I spent a long time building venture-backed tech companies, actually being the software engineer, tech co-founder of venture-backed tech companies, building B2B SaaS companies. And at some point in that process of building these companies, I realized that, it seems like my technology doesn't matter nearly as much as my ability to sell it, like sales and marketing and customer acquisition, way more important than the what. And once I figured that out, my company started becoming more successful, and that was great. And then I wound up, for a variety of reasons that I've talked about elsewhere in the world, wound up teaching entrepreneurship instead of building my own companies. And at that point, I got really kind of interested in social media and looking at kind of the audiences that you can build on social media and recognizing that, oh my gosh, if you have a really big audience, it's amazing what you can do with that audience. And so it all comes down to a fundamentally different paradigm of entrepreneurship. So I'm just going to throw out this paradigm and then we can talk about it and we can dig into it and you can prove me wrong and all those things. But here's what I think. Traditionally, when we think about entrepreneurship, at least in the current zeitgeist, we tend to think about what we might call the garage startup, right? It's your Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak sitting in their garage building the first Apple computers, and they go and they build something really cool. And once you've built the really cool thing, then you turn around and you sell it. And that's the kind of the entrepreneurial model that everyone seems to follow. But there's something weird going on in that model, which we can just look at in the data, right? Everyone knows that the vast majority of startups fail. And we just kind of accept that as collateral damage. Like, oh, hey, startups, it's okay. Startups, entrepreneurship is hard. Lots of startups fail. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. And I think, well, actually, it seems like we should probably wonder, why do so many startups fail? And maybe it's because the fundamental model is flawed. And it turns out there's actually a different entrepreneurial model. I like to call it the bedroom startup as opposed to the garage startup because of all the double entendre that kind of comes with it. I think something like an OnlyFans is a great model if that's your choice. But the idea is it's an audience-focused startup. So rather than taking a product and putting it at the center of what you're doing, you take an audience and you put it at the center of what you're doing. And the reason it's more efficient, the reason it's better is because when your product is at the center of what you're doing, when you're doing a garage startup model, is you build, you think you build something awesome. And then the hard part that I learned back when I was building companies is getting people to it. And that's the valuable part, right? Can you get people to it? But imagine you spend all that time, all that effort, all that work getting people to something, and then they discover that they don't like your product. Well, then all that work you've done is worthless and the company goes up in flames and you lose the valuable asset, which was all that audience. But if you put the audience at the center of your startup, you do this kind of bedroom startup model where you put the audience at the center of what you're doing, well, guess what? You drive a bunch of people to this audience, you build this big, big audience, and then you introduce products to that audience that audience might want. And here's the cool part. If one of those products fails, and chances are it will, right? Your products will, like, you're still, you're not going to necessarily hit it right every time. If one of those products fails, no big deal, because you still have the valuable thing, which was the audience. And so you just put another product in and another product in. And right. And so your models there, your correlators are people like the Kardashians. We don't tend to think of the Kardashians as great entrepreneurs, but of course they are. They're amazing entrepreneurs. They reach over 1.5 billion people across social media. Now, there's a reason Kylie Jenner sold her makeup brand for $600 million. It wasn't because she made incredible makeup. It's because she had an enormous audience and she could push people to it. Now, the last thing I'll say about it, and here's the cool thing, here's why I get excited about it, is none of this is new, right? That's the thing about it. Audience-based startups is not a new concept, right? So if you hopped in a time machine and you went back to, say, 1850, and you talked to someone like a Walt Whitman, a famous American poet that, there's a bridge in schools named after him, but nobody really reads him anywhere. But, Walt Whitman, if you talk to him, like, oh, that's stuffy, that's poetry, nobody cares about poetry, blah, 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 blah. Actually, if you time traveled, you would find that he wasn't trying to be a great literary figure. It's that poetry was like the TikTok of his day. He was a creator, and he was building a big audience, and you had poetry, and you had serialized novels, and you had editorials, and you had pamphlets, and that's where people built audience. And so the big difference now versus, you know, what it was, you know, 200 years ago is just that, like, the unprecedented access. You can be a creator from anywhere, and the unprecedented scalability, right? You can reach millions and millions of people from your bedroom. And so to me, that's just wildly exciting. That was a long answer. Sorry.
So what you said right at the beginning there, right? Because you said about your journey so far. So obviously you have been on the podcast before. So people do want to hear that story. They can go back to that previous episode. And it's quite a dramatic story. So it's good we didn't talk about it again today, because I could ask you a million questions about that. But looking at social media then, you're saying, like, because before we started talking, like, is it the future? Is it the past? For some people, it's the past. Some people say it's already saturated. It's too late. What would you say to those people?
So, you know, it's as I get more interested in this stuff, more invested, I just taught my, this was just yesterday as we're recording this, I taught my social media course at Duke. And, you know, so we're still early in the semester. And so I was trying to give this kind of contextual background and this history. And at the end of the class, you know, I walked in, and, you know, the students were just kind of staring at me like wide-eyed the entire class. And, you know, and they walk out and I kind of turn around and look at the board. And I just done this like extemporaneous lecture, just all off the top of my head. I don't say it bragging, just like I'm so deeply invested in this that I look at the board and I had this like timeline of dates starting with like 3600 BC and, you know, and the invention of written language all the way up to, you know, 2020 and Web3. And I had this like timeline with all these markers of like, oh, here's when the printing press comes in, and here's when the internet comes in, here's when the World Wide Web comes in, Usenet is somewhere in there, and then Web1 and then Web2. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I've just kind of so embodied this timeline. And so my answer to someone who's wondering like, well, you know, the opportunity is over, I would say, what are you talking about? This opportunity has been going on for thousands of years and is still not, it doesn't end, because fundamentally, building audience is, you know, is kind of at the heart of, you know, how cultures and communities grow. And so what we've got is we've just got even more scale around the way cultures and communities grow around people, around ideas, and around people who are able to build audience. And again, if you look at history, right, the names you think of, you know, when you think about history, you start coming up with big names, you know, whether it's famous politicians or famous authors and artists or famous religious figures, right? It's all built around people. There's a reason that, you know, we have a Jesus or a Moses or an Abraham Lincoln Winston Churchill, right? These are all kind of celebrity figures that build audience. We as humans love to identify with individuals and, you know, kind of celebrity individuals. So that's not going anywhere.
So you're obviously teaching students about this, right? And a lot of students will be native to social media, right? They grew up with it. They had it like way before I did. And a lot of those young people are doing incredibly well. And you mentioned this before as well, about how you also have the credibility to be able to teach them, because you've been experimenting with your own social media and your own personal brand. So we're both, obviously, we originally started on Medium. That's where we initially grew our following. And I think we're there, but we're not really that active anymore. Where have you gone to yourself in order to grow an audience, and how have you experimented in a way that makes you stand out?
So, so I will say about Medium, I still post 2 articles per week on Medium. So I'm still there. And part of it is, you know, the following, the not following, what is, you know, it's for me, writing is thinking. And everyone talks about AI coming along and, oh, it's going to, you know, we don't need to write anymore. I'm like, well, never needed to write to, you know, that's how I think. So I don't need AI to do that for me. That's what I use it for. So I'm still on Medium every week. Follow, you know, at Arrington. You mentioned something which was interesting, which was, my students there, you know, I try really hard not to talk about social media as though it's like the new cool thing, because that just makes me sound old. Because to, you know, to a 20-year-old, they're like, this is just the way the world is. It's the water they swim in. And so that's how I approach it, is I try not to think about social media as, oh, this new thing I do. It's just a medium I've tried to commit to as, oh, this is just the way the world is. This is how we communicate. So I really focus. So I started to find success outside of Medium on, of all places, TikTok. I was posting. I won't go into the details of why it works, but, you know, a teacher willing to do TikToks with his class just does really well on me. It's a good medium nugget that just works well. So I found that, oh, if I post silly TikToks, joking around with my class, they will do well. And I've had TikToks go, you know, wildly viral on there. Just for context, though, and the, you know, kind of the shame of it is, you know, I can post a TikTok with my class that'll go really viral and get, you know, 10 million, 15 million views. But I won't get any followers from it. I mean, I'll get a few, but not nearly as many as someone should get with that kind of visibility. If you look at my kind of my, we might call likes to followers ratio, it's really bad. And that's because people are like, oh, this is funny, but I don't care about this guy. I don't want to follow this guy. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to see any of his other content. So, you know, that's the platform. It's the nature of the people on the platform. And I fully get that. So if you are one of my TikTok followers, thank you. And for the rest of you who maybe seen a TikTok and haven't followed, I understand. I get it. But so that's where I started getting a good traction. The problem is my TikTok stuff is not entrepreneurship education, which is all my Medium stuff is, you know, is teaching people how to build companies and think about building ventures, which is kind of what I know and what I try to brand myself around. So I've started pushing Instagram. I've finally gotten on this Instagram thing. I hear it's going to be big. Hot tip. I was always very resistant to Instagram. I never particularly cared for it, but I finally started, especially with Reels, finally committed to Instagram and to do a lot more kind of entrepreneurship education stuff, which seems to do better on Instagram than TikTok. And I've actually launched a second TikTok account where I do more entrepreneurship education stuff. And those are starting to grow. And it goes into the way people are changing their behaviors on those platforms. You know, it used to be, I want to see a silly dance on TikTok. And now people go to TikTok to learn things. And it's kind of neat to see that evolution. So that's where I just tried to play in these different spaces and these different waters so that I can speak reasonably well when I'm talking to my students who have, you know, half a million followers on these platforms. I want to be able to give them value.
Like, as somebody who isn't of that generation, right? What did you think about when you started to do your first TikToks? Did you have any barrier there? Because obviously you've been lecturing for years. You're probably very confident. You've got a podcast, all of that kind of stuff. But to do a silly video on TikTok, was that out of your comfort zone? Or did you find it quite easy? Because a lot of people, let's say people in business right now are listening. They'd be like, I couldn't do that. Like that would, my friends would laugh at me. Well, this would happen.
So, you know, this has really become my, my bread and butter at this point is I work with the old people, and I can group myself into that, I guess, happily. The people who aren't those digital natives is teaching them how to get comfortable on these platforms so that they can build audience. And it is weird to do it. It is uncomfortable. I swore up and down I would never do it. You know, my line was I was never going to do a dance on TikTok. And, you know, I last semester I did a dance. I had some students who are young women who are on the dance team at Duke, and they're really good dancers, and they're always doing dance TikToks. And how could I not like engage with that? So I have silly dance video TikToks where I just look like a fool. But, you know, there's I'm going to call them techniques. There's ways to overcome that self-consciousness. And that's what I work with a lot of kind of, let's call it the old people on is, you know, how do you actually think about creating content on here in a productive way. And so it's I do things on there that I can't believe I do. I can't, you know, 2 years ago, I would have been shocked that I do it, but then, yeah, you start to learn and I understand and appreciate what it is and what it means to do those things and why it's worth doing.
So I've got your Instagram open up on my other screen here, right? So I can see this one here that's got, so you've got 5,000 followers on Instagram. There's a video here that's got 315,000 likes about, for all the college students looking for a job. So what was the logic behind that video in particular, for example? Like, because that one's obviously, so that one's got 4.5 million views, despite you having a relatively new profile and not having a huge amount of followers. Like, what was the thinking behind that? Like, did you think that one was going to take off and do really well, or was it a surprise?
I've had Instagram for years and years, but never really did anything with it until basically about 6 weeks ago, I said, you know, it's time, I need to grow. There's a couple billion people on this platform, I should probably be using it. So I really committed to doing a video a day every weekday to try to find my voice. And the first ones are kind of cringy. They're all kind of cringy, but you know, the first ones are more cringy. I hit that one. And honestly, if we were talking a week ago, you would say you only have 500 followers on Instagram. So that single video with it's 4.5 million views and growing is 10x my followers in a week, which has been cool to see. I was pretty sure that one was going to hit when I grabbed it. Because I was just looking for the right formula. And it takes time to find the right formula. But that's what's so exciting about these platforms is, and TikTok really introduced this, the idea that, you know, traditionally you needed a big following to get lots of eyeballs. So you had to kind of grind away to grow your following. And what TikTok has introduced is this idea that if you have something that's quality content, it will show it to people even if you have no following. And that's incredible. That's historically unprecedented. And so, you know, so you have this ability to put out a piece of content that gets you thousands and thousands of followers, millions of views on a piece of content, and actually, you know, kind of grow at these exponential levels. And so, but I, you know, I say it, and the thing that to always remember is that none of this is magic. It sounds like magic when we talk about it. You know, you're going to listen to a 30-minute podcast and be like, oh, this is going to be so easy. No, it's, you know, remember that part where I said, well, for 6 weeks, every day I was putting out a video, and most of those videos got like 200 or 300 views until the one finally got 4.5 million. So like during that 6 weeks, there was lots of times when I thought, gosh, is this, should I give up? And by the way, the fact that it only took me 6 weeks isn't, you know, again, because it's only going to take someone just starting out 6 weeks. It's because I had been doing it for years over on TikTok and kind of had a good sense of what the right formula was going to be. And it still took me 6 weeks to hit something. And by the way, that's only one video. It's going to take me another, you know, 10 weeks to get another one that does anything useful, because this stuff is hard. It takes time. It takes consistency and commitment.
So what's behind your idea, right? Obviously, people say you should create content for a specific platform. I'd have thought with the videos you got on TikTok, you could be like, okay, this video's done well on TikTok, put it on Instagram, and you'd think it would do pretty well as well. But from what it seems like, you're creating content specifically for Instagram. What's the nuance there? What are you doing differently for Instagram versus TikTok? And you mentioned about it being more entrepreneurial content.
Sure. So, you know, each of these platforms, so there's two things. One I want to get back to, which you said, create content. So let's put a little pin in that. I don't want to come back to that phrase. It's a really important distinction. But to answer your question, every platform, you know, users have kind of expectations on it and around it, right? You know, when you go to Medium, you don't expect, you know, silly little meme dances, right? You go to expect kind of long form articles that are, you know, somewhat thought pieces. LinkedIn is more kind of professional content. So TikTok, the paradigm on TikTok is you don't necessarily follow someone you know. In fact, a lot of the content you see isn't from people you're following. It's people that the algorithm is surfacing. Whereas Instagram, even though it has Reels, which is now kind of using more of that TikTok following, the fundamental paradigm of Instagram is choosing to follow someone. And it goes with what happens when you sign up for an account. When you sign up for, it's been a long time since I signed up for Instagram, so they might have changed it. I think back to originally when you might have signed up for Instagram. You know, the first thing it says when you get in is like, okay, who do you want to follow? Here's some potential people. That's the hardest part about any of these platforms. I have a friend who used to run the onboarding process for Twitter, RIP, I guess, back long time ago. excuse me. But he said the hard part was they knew if you could get a new user invested in something on the platform, then they would start to kind of explore and discover. So it was about finding like one thing that they would really get invested in, and then they will become an active user that will kind of explore and start using other things. And, you know, so that was the paradigm. You had to get a user to come in and like follow accounts and find the thing that they wanted. Well, TikTok kind of turned that all on its head. You open TikTok, and rather than saying, okay, whose account do you want to follow? It just said, hey, here's this video. What do you think of it? And you go, I don't think I liked it. Well, here's how to go to the next one. A swipe. Oh, okay. There's another one. I kind of liked it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Like again, keep watching. Oh, I don't like this one. Let me swipe immediately. And what's happening is TikTok is collecting just, you know, dozens of data points with every video constantly. So it's collecting just so many data points every minute that you're using it, that it quickly figures out what you like. I call TikTok's For You page the Great Truth Serum. You know, steal someone's phone. I don't mean like larceny. I just mean like, you know, grab your friend's phone and look at their For You page, and you're going to learn a lot about your friend that maybe you didn't even want to learn. Because it's a great truth. It knows you better than you know itself. And so that's how TikTok kind of locks you in. But for that to work, and this is a very important distinction, for that to work, TikTok has to show content that's going to be kind of universally appealing. So that's why I said my student content works well. Because just about everyone using it was a student at some point. So they can relate to having its teacher-student relationship. So it's a very universally appealing content. Whereas entrepreneurship is fairly niche content. And because it's niche content, TikTok can't just show it. to any random person, because what are they going to care about it? Whereas on Instagram, you still got that model of like, I'm here because I'm interested in, you know, in certain topics. And so that's when I, you know, that's where I make those distinctions.
You put a pin in something earlier as well, right? Have you covered that point, or would you come back to that?
So the pin I put in there was that you said, you know, you create content, and this is a distinction I'm always kind of trying to explain to my creators, especially my older creators. You know, this concept of creating content is, and for those people just listening, I put the big old air quotes around create content, is the concept of create content is an old person concept. And so you really shouldn't think about it as creating content if you want to be successful on these platforms. It's more about documenting your life. You don't want to go out of your way to magically create something that isn't you or what's going on. Instead, in a world, you know, there are things you do in a day that are aspirational, that are interesting, that are worth sharing. And the question is, how can you document that stuff? And so that's a big part of the shift in how I've even thought of content creation. It's, you know, it's not sitting down, okay, what am I going to put out there? That's how I do my Medium article. So, okay, what am I going to put out there? But the, you know, the TikTok stuff, the Instagram stuff is okay. I'm teaching a class. Let me set up a camera and grab a clip from the class. You know, I'm hanging out with students. Let's, and we're making this joke. Let's just film it. Right. That's documenting your life.
The traditional model that I probably explain, and a lot of other people explain as well, is platforms like TikTok, for example, your discoverability platforms. You get discovered on TikTok, you hopefully create an audience there, but longer term, you want them on, say, LinkedIn, or even LinkedIn is quite a good discoverability platform. But newsletter has always been considered the king, right? Of you want to get people to your newsletter. That's what a lot of creators teach, but most creators don't teach this at university, and they haven't got the same, I guess, theoretical and research background that you have, right? So is that model that everybody is talking about of use these platforms to get an audience and then get them to your newsletter, is that still the best thing today?
So yes, fundamentally, but it's not use these other platforms to get them to your newsletter. That's the technology we're using today. But the fundamental principle that, again, you could go back to, you know, to talk to Walt Whitman or Shakespeare or, you know, Homeric epic way back in the day. The fundamental principle is you need to figure out how to, quote unquote, own your audience. And the problem with having a lot of followers on any given platform is you can be deplatformed, or the platform can shut down, or the platform changes and suddenly it doesn't work for you anymore. You know, this is a concern actually I have right now on Medium. Medium's really kind of shifting its model. And maybe it's going away, or maybe it's growing bigger, whatever it is, but I'm not sure that its new model is going to really fit the kind of content creation I do. But that's where I have, you know, 60 something thousand followers. And it's like, well, you know, what happens, right? And so the reason you want to own your audience is because, the reason we want them in your newsletter is because then it doesn't matter what happens with the platforms. There's always this group of people that you can communicate with that. And those are, it's always going to be your smallest number. You know, you're going to have 100,000 followers on TikTok and 2,000 followers in your newsletter. But those 2,000 in your newsletter are way, 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 way more valuable to what you're trying to accomplish. They're your community. And it sounds a little weird to say own your followers, as though like you don't care. Like those are the people in my newsletter, the people I care the most about, right? They're ones that when they reach out and send me an email and, you know, want to hop on a call, like I will do it. You know, but if someone does that on TikTok, probably not, right? It's because those are the people that, you know, that we've actually built a kind of a strong relationship with.
And you mentioned as well about once you've got an audience, then it's about creating an actual product to serve the audience, right? What do you teach creators around that, or even creators, even business people? So you've got an audience, how do you choose a product or work that model out to make sure that, one, you don't alienate your audience, but also you're able to sustain yourself too?
That is a great question that I'm much more focused on the building than I am on the, okay, now what? And again, that's not for a lack of caring about it or a lack of knowing it's, you know, I think there's actually a lot already that kind of deals with how to, launch product and get stuff and test product of the audience. All that kind of design centered thinking stuff is just as applicable, but you want to do it. You know, so it's not me weaseling out of the question. I guess it's me saying like, all that stuff is good. right? You know, thinking about your, thinking about your audience, testing in your audience, you know, getting user-driven feedback is all exactly what you want to be doing. The key distinction is, can you do it to a group of people that you already kind of have in your community? And so once you have a community, you know what that community is interested in. You know, you get a sense from what they respond to well and what you create, what they don't respond to well. And that kind of guides your thinking of, oh, I think my community is interested in this particular topic. And so there's some level of that. And then there's some level of, you know, your community starts to trust you. So if you believe your community needs something, then you can authoritatively say, hey, I think you all need this. So I'm going to try to deliver it to you. That's actually something I'm doing right now with my community. I tell you what, you know, most people who follow me, they follow me because they want entrepreneurship education content. They want to know about fundraising. I know if I write an article about how to go raise venture capital, it will, you know, it'll get a lot of views and a lot of comments and a lot of new followers, which is funny because, or it's unfortunate because, of course, the vast majority of entrepreneurs don't need to know anything about fundraising. It's actually, stay away from fundraising if you can, but whatever. But you know, so I build an audience around that. But what they really need is they need to know how to build audience, and they're not interested in that. So a lot of the work I'm trying to do now is say, okay, I'm going to give you that entrepreneurship advice you want, but like once I get you into my funnel, then I'm going to start trying to point you to. I have a new online course. It's called 90 Day Creator. And, you know, 90daycreator.com. Go check it out. It's the idea of like you need to figure out how to be a creator yourself to build audience so that you can more effectively get your products, your entrepreneurial initiatives in front of people. And so entrepreneurs need to think about building their audiences, but they're not thinking about it already. So that's kind of what I mean by you build an audience around yourself or around whatever, you know, around X, and then you start to gain the credibility to be able to say, okay, you all trust me. So trust me on this one. You need to start thinking about how to build your LinkedIn or your TikTok or your Instagram. So, you know, here, I'm going to help you with that.
Yeah, I think it comes down to as well, it's a lot of people fall in love with their product or their solution as opposed to the problem, right? And by building an audience, what you're constantly understanding is that actual, like, what's the problems that need to be solved? And then you can keep changing your products or your solutions to fit that. Whereas I think what a lot of traditional, maybe the model of entrepreneurship or what people think about it in the past is I need to build something and then find an audience for that or then find people to buy it. And that fundamental shift, like you said, is becoming more and more important, especially because now anybody can build an audience. I say anybody, but people who've got the right work ethic, got the right consistency, got the right ideas and strategy behind it can do that. And you mentioned some of your university students have built up quite large followings. Have you got any interesting stories from them? Maybe you can mention by name or not by name, whatever you're allowed to do, about how they've converted their audience into thriving businesses.
So yeah, I've got a number of really just incredible students. It is where there's something called FERPA, Federal something something privacy something. I don't know, but it is a privacy act. So I always try to be really. It's this very weird line to walk because we do things that are incredibly public, but there's also I don't want to violate student privacy. So you're right. I won't mention names though. It seems easy enough to find. But I have a few for so top of mind a few wonderful young women. One is a chef, a pastry chef that has maybe 700,000-ish followers across kind of her different platforms, and she's really so food TikTok, food social media is a very weird it's this whole kind of sub industry with all these different creators, and so 700,000 is a lot in some industries. It's kind of small in that industry, but it's kind of that tipping point of starting to become big and legitimate. And and so what does a food creator sell? Does this person, does she start to just say, I sell recipes? Does she start selling food that people buy? Does she set up a restaurant? Does she sell merch? Like what does she sell? And so we're starting to explore kind of the monetization of, the monetization of that and of her audience. And we've started to explore it in kind of a variety of different ways selling specific food, as opposed to, kind of partnership deals and hosting deals and things like that. So, that's an example. I have another young woman who's an athlete, Yeah, she's written a book about sports nutrition, as well as, you know, so now in the United States, college athletes, there was landmark legislation, I'm not even sure we can call it legislation. I just think it's kind of the blowing up of everything. But basically now college athletes can monetize on their name, image, and likeness in ways that they couldn't before. But of course, they have platform, they have audience. If you're, you know, the star athlete at a, you know, Division I university, you can reach people. And she's done just an absolutely incredible job of building an audience around herself. And again, so she's had, she's put out a book, and then she's also got lots of cool partnership deals with, you know, big companies that have come in and want to, you know, want access to her audience. So she's doing, you know, different, a variety of different deals. Sponsorship deals with these companies, which again, it's just incredible to see. So there's kind of two ways you can go when you have an audience. You can monetize by sponsorships, or you can monetize by selling products into your audience. The latter, you know, selling products into your audience takes a lot bigger audience, right? You know, now you start talking about, you know, 10 million, 20 million followers, you know, not quite Mr. Beast levels. You know, he's a whole different level. But you've really got to start getting, you know, because you still got low conversion rates, right? Just like any product, you got fairly low conversion rates. So you got to, in order to start selling your own product, you've got to have a really big audience. So kind of the, or a very niche and specialized audience. So the kind of the pathway forward for a consumer focused creator, right? Someone who's in like a cooking space or sports is partnerships and brand deals. And then if they keep getting bigger, then they can start selling their own product. Whereas someone like me, I'm much more of a niche creator, so I'm never going to get, you know, Taco Bell's never going to come in and sponsor my content. Though if you're listening, Taco Bell, I will tell people to eat a burrito. But instead, you know, my opportunity is, you know, I have these business professionals who are trying to figure out how to get more clients. They need to know how to use LinkedIn better. They're thinking, gosh, should I be on the TikTok and all that stuff, right? Those people, is a very specialized market, but I don't need a ton of them. They can come to me, and those are the people I specialize in, you know, in helping. And so, you know, I can sell something to them. So again, it depends what kind of creator you are.
So thanks so much for coming on today, Aaron. If people listening right now want to like learn more about you, you mentioned about the 90-day creator course, where do you want to send them? Where should people be heading to?
Sure. So I would check out 90daycreator.com and just Aaron Dinnan. If you just Google, you know, that's the advantage and or disadvantage of doing all the content creation is you're a very public person. So AaronDinnan.com, all the, you know, at Aaron Dinnan on any social media platform that's worth being on. You know, you'll find me somewhere doing a silly dance. And I'm okay with that.